The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back, everyone, and thanks for listening. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew Mariani today, taking your calls on the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. The audio you just heard were high school students marching down a hallway, chanting the slogan, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." This is the slogan that calls for explicitly for the annihilation of Israel. And if you're a parent of a high school student, you might be a little surprised to hear your student or to hear students at a local high school chanting that. We are seeing more and more of that. Of course, we saw students walking out in San Francisco and Berkeley. I believe it was Thursday and Wednesday of this week. In protest of the Israeli response to the Hamas attack on their civilians, 1,300 Israeli civilians dead, and the idea that maybe these high school students have enough sophistication to understand the issues involved seems a little difficult to credit. And so the question is, who's leading these chants and why? And here to talk about those issues and more is Sherry Few. Sherry is the founder and president of U.S. Parents Involved in Education. You can find that at USPIE.org, USPIE.org, U.S. Parents Involved in Education. And Sherry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ed. I appreciate you having me on.
You know, I mean... high school students sometimes just have dumb ideas about politics, right? I mean, I remember being a high school student myself, and I remember having a few dumb ideas about politics myself. I don't recall being annihilationist when it came to the stupid politics that I thought I was smart enough to understand. And I also don't recall that you would have these types of organized demonstrations on issues that were so far beyond the ken of the student body there, right? I mean, we might sit around at the, you know, in the quad debating some of these things with the arrogance of youth, I guess you could say. But this is something different, Sherry. What's going on with these demonstrations, not just in high schools, but also in colleges?
Well, yeah. So, you know, the first signs we saw of it were on the college campuses and, you know, the students protesting, often led by professors. And so, you know, I think many of us have known for some time and perhaps turned a blind eye to the fact that the colleges and universities have extremely liberal professors that are indoctrinating young children. Because these are still, you know, when you go to college, you're 18, 19 years old. I'm sorry, but you can't even drive a rental car till you're 21. So your brain is still developing. But right. These young people are influenced and indoctrinated by these very liberal professors that's been happening for decades. But I guess we, as a society, decided, well, there's not much we can do about it. You know, there's free speech and yada, yada. But then when we started seeing it trickle down into K-12, then the red flags went up. And people are beginning to understand what's happening in the government schools and how very liberal the agenda is. The indoctrination in K-12 has also been going on for some time, but it's really been accelerated, I'd say, in the last 8 or 10 years. So I've been studying education policy for more than 20 years, and when my children were in middle school, I began to see in their curriculum problems with how history and geographic locations were being described. I saw where China was promoted, and let me put this in context, because my children are now mid-30s, okay? So this is a couple of decades ago when I began to see the issues. So they were taught that China was this wonderful form of government, that they were able to control population by providing tax incentives or tax credits to families, which we know is absolutely false. I mean, we know that there are forced abortions and all kinds of things going on to control population in China, and has been for some time. So I recognize these problems. And by the way, the contrast for the American form of government was very negative. So
right.
I saw this. I saw the insidious sex education standards and curriculum that were being taught. And that's when I formed an organization called South Carolina Parents Involved in Education. You know, we later went national in 2015 as United States Parents Involved in Education. So I just give you that context for you to understand that this didn't just start. It's been going on. It was sort of the frog in the water thing. And then all of a sudden, I think with COVID, parents really woke up because kids were shut out of the classroom, forced to study at home. They had their Chromebooks, and parents were home with them, and they saw what they were learning. So in that two-year span of COVID, that's when we saw the explosion of parents beginning to speak out, going to their school board meetings and saying, this is ridiculous. I don't want you teaching. I want you to teach my child math and reading and the basics and leave these other topics alone. So we've seen it really accelerate, as I've mentioned. But the other part that's historical is the adoption of the Common Core standards back in 2010. I don't know if you remember that that was a big political battle, and we fought against it. But every state in the nation has the Common Core standards, and every grade level has a standard that has a child being trained to be a social justice advocate. So they are being trained from kindergarten up that they're supposed to be addressing societal ills. And then, of course, they take the opportunity to describe the liberal version of what they believe societal ills are. So they have been trained since very young to do what we see them doing today. So it's an intentional agenda. It's been happening for some time. It's on steroids now. And it's frightening. It's frightening to see how these young minds have been tainted. They hate our country. They've been taught to hate America. And
yes.
So they think that America is the oppressor. And that's why they're supporting Hamas. And they're supporting organizations that want to destroy our country, that want death to America.
We are speaking with Sherry Few, who is the founder and president of U.S. Parents Involved in Education, USPIE.org. Taking your calls at 888-914-9149, excuse me, if you want to join the conversation. I'll say that one more time, 888-914-9149. And Sherry, I think the problem here is, and as somebody who's been involved in this for as long as you have, I think the problem here is that education changed very dramatically about 60 years ago or so, which was that we used to teach people how to think, not necessarily what to think, right? We would teach them the classics. Classical education would expose them to the great thinkers of Western civilization as something that was valuable to rely on. So you had the whole breadth of history. We connected people to history to let them know that, hey, look, these are the things that were going on in history, and these are the reasons why we developed this country in the way that we did, as imperfectly as it was, and et cetera, et cetera. We don't do that anymore. I mean, we just simply don't do that. We don't teach that way anymore. And it's the problem now has become that we're not educating people in how to think. And you've said it, we're indoctrinating people in what to think. And that's the problem, is that we're sending these people into the world completely unprepared to deal with dissent, for one thing, for contradictory facts, for another, and they become very brittle and unable to deal with contradictions. And so when they protest, if they don't get their way, they become violent.
Yes, and that's a grave concern, because they have been taught that justice should be served at all costs. And
yes.
And they've been they have been rewarded for their actions. We saw it with the riots after the George Floyd murder, you know, when all the vandalism and violence and even people died. But the mainstream media portrayed it as though, you know, they had a right to be doing this, and they were just peacefully protesting, which was the total opposite of what was happening. So so we see it even more. I saw a news report yesterday of a police officer who pulled someone over, and the perpetrator resisted arrest and nearly killed him. And I mean, he ended up shooting the perpetrator. The
yes.
police officer did, but it was horrific to see how he just totally ignored the authority and proceeded to try to kill the policeman. So, you know, there was the anti-police movement and so many things that came together. And, you know, that was really a culminating moment, George Floyd's murder. I mean, that's when we really saw a big push in the K-12 schools for what I call distorted Black history. The critical race theory was embedded, diversity, equity, inclusion, all those things. I mean, it's like it emboldened the schools to move ahead with agenda that they were already secretly implementing.
Yeah,
but they just moved full steam ahead after that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that, Sherry, because and I mean, it went beyond that. I mean, they were already starting on this. This was part of the whole I would refer to it as a culturally Marxist approach to society, which is to focus on racial and ethnic determinism in order to create conflicts that can only be resolved by, an authoritarian government. And I think the George Floyd situation just catalyzed more of that. But we were already well on our way to what you're talking about. Let's go to the phones, because I want to bring in Aubrey from Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. And I lived in the Twin Cities until a couple of years ago. So Brooklyn Center has had some of these issues themselves. And Aubrey, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to echo what you were stating about, you know, the school systems. I'm, graduated in 2002 and was, you know, completely indoctrinated when I look back on my, you know, public school education. Up until like 3 years ago, I hated our country. I thought it was inherently racist. I thought that we were like, you know, the warmongers of the world, thought just everything negatively possible about our country. I thought I was a social justice warrior, and, you know, I was completely backward on reality, you know, that's my son in the background. In Brooklyn Center, like you were stating, we experienced what happened with Dante Wright. Like a horrible tragedy, but, you know, had really, you know, same with George Floyd, had nothing to do with race,
right.
But it got turned into that, you know, and we're still, you know, very much, you know, being told this all the time, like, oh, this is, you know, our community is being traumatized by this and traumatized by, you know, all this stuff that's, you know, even if it's not like going on in our community, you know, anything that happens that seems to be like, you know, police dealing with a non-white person. And if it, you know, becomes violent or whatever, it's like, oh, this is traumatizing our community. And it's like, you guys are traumatizing the community by always saying that like, we're like lumped in this together, you know? I guess that's all I kind of had to say. Sorry.
No, I think it's great. I really appreciate that. I was actually still living there when the Dante Wright thing happened. And for those who don't know what the Dante Wright incident was, it was somebody who had been pulled over for I believe it was on a felony warrant, but I could be mistaken about that. And there was some resistance to getting out of the car. And mm-hmm. the police officer who was there, I can't remember her name.
Kim Potter,
Kim Potter, and she thought she had pulled her taser out, and instead she had pulled her pistol out, and she got convicted of, I believe it was involuntary manslaughter, and got sentenced to at least some time in prison for that. So Aubrey, thank you very much for your call. Sherry, let's go to one more call, because I want to talk to Miguel in Tampa, Florida, before we get this, before we come back to this. Miguel, welcome to the conversation.
Hi, how are you doing?
You're good. Thank you, sir.
Well, This, everything we're seeing right now, Cicero said 2000, I used to teach politics, I'm retired now. Cicero said this 2100 years ago, when the criminals are made the victims and when everything is discombobulated, that society is done unless it's rescued by its own righteous people. What we're seeing now began as far back as 1941, and it's, I will not say the name because I don't want to get anyone into trouble.
Sure,
but it's a specific political lodge that anyone, everyone knows with a big G on their car decals, that allied itself with other political movements like the indigenous movement in South America, aiming to de-Christianize the entire French, Spanish, and Portuguese Americas. Like, that was a mistake of history, so that will be eliminated, and forget about the human sacrifices and cannibalism. So we also have nowadays the restoration of the caliphates in Islam. As we know by now, many Middle Eastern monarchies are financing terrorist groups. So we're having this in North South America, Far East, and Europe, where you have the imposition and the cancellation of Judeo-Christian, which is basically the Greco-Roman apologetics, okay, which is Aristotelian and Socratic methods, inductive and deductive, learn how to think. And
yes.
There's a proverb. So basically, this is going on everywhere, and it's being financed from specific places.
Well, Miguel, thank you very much for your call. And Miguel touches on, you know, what I want to talk about here, not necessarily what the issues were that the high school kids were chanting in the hallways, although I think that was of interest. But it's about the fact that they're being led into points of view as indoctrination rather than education. And Miguel, you know, Sherry, this is back to you. Miguel brought this up, is that they're not being taught how to think. They're being taught what to think and what to say. And I mean, there's certainly some education that has to be done by rote, you know, like phonics and, you know, mathematics to some extent. But this is a political education, and it's become more and more political as it's gone along.
Oh yes, you're absolutely right. It is. It's very sad to see that, especially the amount of money that we spend on government schools, on government education. I mean, it's billions upon billions of dollars every year. And so our tax dollars, those of us who love our country and you know, we want to support government schools, we want to support a good education for children. It's absurd that our funds are being used against us, and literally are, because believe me, it's an intentional agenda for those who want to change our form of government. As you described with the critical Marxist theories, it's being established to have all of these identity groups pitted against one another so that someone can come in and take over as a dictator in our country. And so that's where we're headed if we don't stop it. And so that's why everybody listening needs to be involved and engaged and informed on this topic, because a lot of people, when they hear about education, they think, oh, well, my kids are out of school, so, you know, that doesn't affect me anymore. No, sir. They need to wake up and understand that if we don't stop indoctrinating children in government schools, we're going to lose our very freedom in this country. We're not even, you know, we are already, what I should say, what freedom we have left, because we are already, you know, we're being pegged as domestic terrorists, those of us who are speaking out against these things. So our own government is working against us already. And it's frightening. So our organization, United States Parents Involved in Education, was recently placed on the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate list. And the FBI and CIA look at this list, and that's how they deem domestic terrorists and groups that need to be watched. So only because we're speaking out against pornography in schools, the sexualization of children, the critical Marxist theories, because we're exercising our free speech, all of a sudden we've become terrorists. So the government is weaponized against us. And so it is because of what children have been taught that they're behaving this way. They, you know, I remember when I was going to school, we were taught to be patriotic, to love our country. And I don't believe there's any country in the world that doesn't teach their children to love their country outside of the United States of America. So it's very sad what's happening. I'd like to say kudos to Aubrey and for her willingness to share how her views were so distorted, and especially because she's a 2002 graduate. I mean, think about it, that she's had the revelation and has overcome that indoctrination. And it reminded me of my daughter-in-law, who's in her early 30s, and she's actually the protagonist in the film that we have produced. It's called Truth and Lies in American Education. And it's her story, it's her true story, how she moved from what she called a poster child for the left to now being an advocate for United States parents involved in education and exposing what's happening. And she just wants parents to understand that kids, they should not put their kids in government schools. If they love their children, they have to get them out, because what's happening is they're even pitting parents against children. I mean, with the transgenderism that's happening, there are so many policies and things in place that are preventing parents from even knowing that schools are grooming their children and going by certain pronouns. And it's absurd that parents are being kept out of that process.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
I mean, I'm
sorry. No, you go ahead, Sherry. I keep stepping on you. Go ahead and finish your thought there.
Oh, I was just going to say that we don't recommend any parent put their child in government schools today. And, you know, that doesn't mean we're giving up on the kids that are left behind. That's why we're fighting and we're talking about these things, because we have to see a change. And our organization's mission is to close the U.S. Department of Education and end all federal education mandates, because a lot of the nefarious pedagogy is coming from federal and other national influences. And we have to return to local control of schools if we're going to regain a solid academic program for children.
Well, I agree. And I think that that's really what the issue is. It's got to be local control, and it's got to be parental control. Parents have to be able to get involved. And a lot of parents want to be involved, but when they try to get involved, as they did in Loudoun County, Virginia, which is, where they you were referring to this. This is in 2021, where parents were objecting to the critical race theory based curricula being taught in their schools. And one parent was also objecting to the opening of the bathrooms to all genders because his daughter had been assaulted in one of them. They got labeled as domestic terrorists, and you're absolutely right. It's not that parents don't want to be involved, right, Sherry? It's that a lot of times the system is set up so that they can't be involved, or they're extremely discouraged from being involved. And we saw that in Virginia in 2021 when one of the candidates for governor said parents shouldn't be involved in these decisions. It really should be left up to education professionals. And I mean, it was astounding to hear that. And I imagine that you probably got more than a few new memberships at the United States, Parents Involved in Education, USPIE.org at that point in time too.
Well, yes. And you know, that is the mindset. What that governor said, it was the governor of Virginia. He was the incumbent at the time. What he said is the mindset of many adults on the left, and particularly in the education system. I call them educats. They really believe that if you're not fully trained through post-secondary education to be working in education, then you should have no say in the matter. And I remember during the Common Core fight, I had signed up at our state house to speak in favor of a bill to end Common Core. And there were a few ladies in front of me signing up to speak. They didn't know who I was, and they were obviously teachers, because later when they spoke, I recognized that they were teachers. But what they were saying to one another when they were signing up was, and they were referring to parents, they said, if you're not a teacher, you shouldn't have any say in this. And so when it was my opportunity to get up and speak, I just used them as an example of how absurd it was that they thought a parent shouldn't have any input into what their children is learning.
Let's go to the phones really quickly. Ray from Buena Park, near my old stomping grounds where I grew up. Ray, welcome to the show.
Yes, I wanted to say that I'm a Native American, and what I've realized that over the past five decades that I know of, you know, these professors, these radicals in universities, you know, it was like they couldn't wait to get their hands on these indigenous students. And let me tell you, you know, a vast majority of these students have experienced have bought into this socialist ideology, and it's very discerning. I don't like it. I made sure I brought that to the attention of my children when they were preparing to go to college. And let me tell you, that system is so corrupt. The education system and the higher learning is so corrupt. It's unbelievable. And these professors, they knew exactly what they were doing. They targeted the Native American population of students. And that's what I wanted to say.
Well, Ray, thank you very much for your call. Appreciate you being quick on that, too, because I want to give Sherry one quick moment for a response, and then we'll make sure we know how people can get in touch with her. Sherry.
Oh, yes, I agree with your caller. He's right, and he's recognized it on his own. He's seen it firsthand, and so many have. So, you know, again, that's why we need to all be working together. We need not sit back and say, this is not a problem I can solve. Together we can, and that's why our national organization has established chapters all around the country, and we have close to 25 chapters now. We'd like to have one in every state by 2025, so I encourage your listeners to go to our website, USPIE, that's USPIE.org, to join the movement and see if there's a chapter in the state. If there's not, there's a way to contact us, and we can help you get a chapter started.
Sherry Few is the founder and president of U.S. Parents Involved in Education, USPIE.org. As she said, USPIE.org, an easier way to remember that. Sherry, thank you so much for being with us. When we come back after this break, we'll be talking about what's coming up at the cinema, what's worth watching, what you may want to avoid. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew Mariani. We'll be right back.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, you can support Relevant Radio in many ways. Joining a giving society, donating a vehicle you don't need anymore, or donating a piece of land or other real estate. Donate now at relevantradio.com/property.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's 33 minutes past the hour. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew Mariani, taking your calls on the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Well, we're almost at the weekend, folks. We're almost there. And that means we're going to turn our eyes to the entertainment world and see if anything's out there that's worth watching. Joining us for that is my friend Christian Toto from HollywoodInToto.com, at HollywoodInToto on Twitter. He's also the host of the Hollywood in Toto podcast, and does all sorts of great stuff over there. He's presently in the middle of 31 Days of Horror, because, of course, it's October, Christian, and Hollywood, Halloween is coming up at the end of the month, so I've been actually kind of following that series for a bit here.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'm trying to highlight movies that people haven't heard of. And listen, horror is not for everyone, but you know, you don't need me to tell you to see The Exorcist or The Shining or any of these, you know, movies that we've watched for years. They're renowned as classics in the genre. So you know, I'm trying to find lesser known stuff that maybe you didn't hear about but might want to check out.
Yeah, I think today you're looking at X, which is probably not something that the audience here would be necessarily into, but I have seen some of it. I actually watched Pearl, though, which was their prequel to that, which I actually thought was a much better movie. I don't know if you've ever seen Pearl.
Yeah, I enjoyed Pearl very much. That actress Mia Goth is quite good, and it's interesting. The filmmaker is a very talented fellow. He made a movie called In the Valley of Violence, which is a Western, kind of an old-school throwback Western with John Travolta, I believe, and Ethan Hawke. It's quite good, so that might be a better choice to check out if you're not a horror movie buff, but yeah, interesting stuff out there.
Oh, yeah. Very interesting. And, of course, that that series is going to continue for a while. I wanted to talk to you about something else. And you didn't write this post, but this was about a new streaming children's series. I would say maybe an adolescent series or a teen or tween series called Dot Connor. And I saw this on your website, and it was a guest post written by the producer, I believe. And I actually thought it was rather charming. It looks like it's an interesting faith-based children's detective series. And it kind of reminded me of Encyclopedia Brown. I don't know how many people are going to even remember Encyclopedia Brown. Have you ever read the Encyclopedia Brown stuff when you were a kid?
Back in the day, I did, yes. The name
there
definitely rings a bell. So.
Well, thank you very much for rescuing me on that point. I was really... for a second there, Christian Toto, I was thinking maybe I'm just going to go out and be out on the limb and saw it off here. No, but it's like Encyclopedia Brown was sort of like a kid's version of it's like Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys, except it was probably aimed just a little younger than that. And they were fun little short stories, some of the short little mysteries. And it looks like Dot Connor is kind of the same way, only it is... it's faith-based. There's quite a bit of faith content in this, and it looks like a brand new launch. Is that right?
Yeah, you know what's interesting about this show is it isn't a one-off, because we're seeing more and more content that is well produced and has good acting in it, solid production values, but it's aimed at different audiences. It's aimed at people who are getting exhausted by the secular kids programming, by the messaging that we're seeing in some kids programming. And for those reasons in and of itself, I'm like, wow, that's a nice twist. So I think you're going to see more and more of this. And again, I think maybe 10, 20 years ago, it might be crude, it might be embarrassing or amateurish, but that's no longer the case. You know, and I also compare Dot Connor to what the Daily Wire is doing. They just announced a whole slate of kid-friendly programming. And, you know, you won't get lectures. You won't have inappropriate material. It's going to be about inspiration and good core values. And that's it. And just sweet stories you can have, and your kids can watch them. And you don't have to think about it. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to watch over their shoulders. It's just sweet content. And I think that we're really looking for that kind of storytelling. We're not often getting it, but now we are, drip by drip. I think it's a wonderful thing.
We are talking with Christian Toto from HollywoodInToto.com, at HollywoodInToto on Twitter, and taking your calls at 888-914-9149. Yeah, you know, I think that I've seen what they're doing, what, you know, Ben Shapiro's doing over at the Daily Wire. That looks really good. The one here, the Dot Connor one here, was sort of a challenge to Disney, right? That was the way that the essay was framed. And again, you should go over and read this. The trailer for Dot Connor is up on Christian's site, HollywoodInToto.com. You can go over there and check it out. Disney has other issues going on right now. They've got a shareholder revolt going on right now because the stock price has dropped so dramatically over the last couple of years, and to some extent because of just bad business decisions in terms of the streaming, but also because of some of the political fights that they've gotten into and some of the messaging that has been built into their entertainment. And that brings me to Wish, which I'm going to say right now, this is a caveat. I've only seen the trailer. Nobody's seen the film yet. I don't even think it's been out for review yet. But based on the trailer, it certainly looks like they're taking aim at Christianity and promoting a type of neo-paganism based just on the trailer. That's the way this looks. I mean, have you seen the trailer, and what are you hearing about Wish?
You know, I haven't heard much about that. This is a Pixar movie. It is from Disney because Disney scooped up Pixar a few years ago.
Yep.
You know, in the past, Pixar has been among the more less objectionable Disney offshoots, honestly. They usually do focus on rigorous storytelling, classic information. I feel like that's one of the parts of Disney which has been less corrupted by the other elements within the company. So I'm going to hold fire on this one. I don't know. It's still a few weeks away. No one has seen it, so I'm a little uncomfortable kind of getting too in depth
right
there. But you know, but this is Disney. This is a company that is really working hard to send very specific messaging, to have aggressively diverse and in ways that can be wonderful, in ways that can be very inappropriate content aimed at young audiences. And, you know, I think what Pixar has done up until recently is do stories that are fun for adults. They're fun for kids. They bridge the gap. They have classic tales. You know, the Toy Story films, I think, are wonderful. So I'm going to hope that they cling to those values and don't kind of fall into the newer Disney trap. But that's what Disney's doing. I mean, you hear a lot of horror stories about what goes on behind the scenes. And some of the animators who may be people of faith are just, you know, they're trying to send the message, hey, you know, not all of us want this kind of programming. Can't our voices be heard, too? And of course, they're not, because it is Disney. It is the corporate culture to be more woke. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, I think Disney, so much of what they've done is damaging the brand, possibly permanently. It's mostly self-inflicted. You know, listen, this is a complicated time for entertainment studios, even giants like Disney. But boy, right, they have really put their foot in their mouth again and again. And I think they're going to look back in 10 years and think, my gosh, what did we do? We had this beloved brand and we ruined it with many, many parts of the population in America and beyond. And it makes me sad, because I think Disney should be, you know, as American as apple pie. It's something we can all rally around. We can argue, we can bicker, we can fight over politics and certain issues. But when it comes to kids' entertainment, Disney's the gold standard. But you know what? Disney used to be the gold standard. I don't think it's that way anymore.
I don't think so. I don't think so. And I think it's because they've, you know, it's a trust issue now when it comes to their relationship with parents. And I think it's playing out all along the Disney, you know, product line, if you will, right? The attendance at the parks is down. That certainly may have something to do with inflation, too. But I also think it has to do with the fact that they haven't done very well with their films at the box office. And I think their films at the box office really are sort of enthusiasm feeders for visiting the parks, right? I mean, that's how they build connections to children and get the children to, you know, to bug their parents to take them to Disneyland or Disney World. And I mean, you take a look at Disney's box office performance this year, and it's been disappointing for them.
Yeah, I think it's the opposite of synergy. It's like all these things are working against Disney. You've got films that aren't really connecting with the public. You've got a company that's getting aggressively political and aggressively in the culture wars in a way that's wildly unnecessary. You've got an economy which is not doing well. And also you've got theme parks where there are a million different ways to entertain ourselves and to, you know, lean into our leisure time. And if you just kind of say, well, I would check out Disney, but look at what they're doing, or look at this or look at that, all of a sudden you've just changed your mind. And I think that's happening on a wider scale. And what a just an absolute boneheaded decision to go down this path that was not necessary. But, you know, I think that they got full of themselves. I think that they have all these different beloved brands they thought they could milk and milk and milk. And it turns out they can't. You know, we've seen the end of the Indiana Jones story. They can't seem to make a Star Wars movie. The Disney Plus streaming shows get less and less ratings. They have miscalculated in an incredible degree. And I'm surprised more mainstream news outlets aren't talking about this the way they've sabotaged themselves. It was wildly unnecessary.
I think with this Nelson Peltz challenge to Bob Iger, right, the shareholder revolt, I think they're going to have to start talking about that, because it's impacted the stock value to the point where Peltz had tried this once before, but Disney's stock was too strong for Peltz to have much of an impact, and he's back. And I think that there's going to be a big fight over this, and that is going to force some of these discussions to the top of the news.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. I think that the Disney Plus is turning it into a debacle, because there's so much streaming competition out there. You take that plus the brand having a black eye in the eyes of many people. It's a terrible time to go out on a limb and to get political and to be divisive. And, you know, there's so many ways that people can entertain themselves these days. Whether when I'm going to bed at night, I either read a book or I watch YouTube and I'll watch some cooking shows. I mean, that didn't exist 10 years ago. Right. And all of a sudden, a cooking show with a fraction of the budget of your average Disney program has got my eyeballs and maybe some other eyeballs. And all of a sudden, you don't need to spend a gazillion dollars to entertain us. Meanwhile, Disney's, you know, writing on these huge checks, and they're not getting the attention that they could or they should. So it's there's lots of pressure on the Mouse House, and it's going to be fascinating to see what happens from here.
Some of that, too, by the way, isn't necessarily unique to Disney either. They're, you know, the other studios are overspending and getting, you know, under-delivering products for that. We're going to take a quick break right now, but when we come back with Christian Toto from HollywoodandToto.com, I want to take a look at a big movie that's coming out. This is good. If you've been in the movie theaters anytime in the last 4 months, you've seen the trailer for this film. And he's got a review up on it. We'll talk a little bit about how this film is going to impact the box office and what other films you might have choices from this week. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew Mariani. We'll be right back.
Getting you connected.
The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio. This is the Drew Mariani Show.
This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Why did you come here?
I work with my uncle.
You scared of him?
Oh, he's the nicest man in the world.
Osage is dying by the enemy. Do not let them die alone.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's 50 minutes past the hour. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew Mariani. Sorry about mangling his name in the last segment. Taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I'm going to get a memo from Drew on that, I'm certain. And by the way, don't forget to stay tuned at the top of the hour for the Cale Clark Show. That is coming up next. But right now we have Christian Toto of Hollywood and Toto on with us right now. HollywoodandToto.com, at Hollywood and Toto on Twitter. And look, I mean, I haven't been in the theater an awful lot, Christian. I mean, you know, a few times over the last few months. But every single time I've been there, I've been I've been subjected to the very energetic trailer of Killers of the Flower Moon, which is the Martin Scorsese film that's just coming out this weekend. It has been heavily hyped, heavily promoted, which you kind of expect. If you're going to have Martin Scorsese and, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio in a film, you're going to definitely want to make sure everybody knows about it. And it looks really good. I mean, the trailer made it look really interesting, really good. It's based on a true story of murders at Osage Nation in the 1920s, early, or at least the early 20th century. And so is this more Goodfellas or is it more The Irishman?
Oh, gosh. Interesting comparison. I lean a little bit more toward The Irishman in that it's forever long. It's 3 hours and 26 minutes, which no movie should ever be, honestly.
Oh, but, wow.
It has its moments. There, great production value, great acting, some interesting sequences. And again, the story that it's based on is both tragic and compelling. So you got a lot of things in its favor. Plus, it's Martin Scorsese, who knows how to make a film, obviously, even on his worst day. But I found it a little bit wanting. It is about corruption and greed and exploitation and how the Osage Nation was just attacked in a way by people who wanted to get at the money. They had they struck oil on it and they became very wealthy. And of course, then people swooped in and tried to get it from them. And, you know, you've got interesting characters. You got De Niro, Robert De Niro and DiCaprio, and they're on screen a lot together. They're excellent. But I felt like it's the kind of story that explains a lot. And then toward the end, they re-explain things in a way that didn't feel exactly revelatory or exciting or noteworthy. And so I think there's some storytelling flaws here that are that hurt the film. So, again, this is not a bad film. They don't make many really handsomely produced films for adults these days. This certainly qualifies. When you have this kind of this talent on the screen, it still matters. But I just think given Scorsese, given his track record, and given the story here, it should have resulted in a great movie, and it's merely a pretty good one.
You know, what it kind of reminds me a little bit of, Christian, and I don't mean this to say that it's – because when I say this film title, there is a connotation that goes with it. And I don't necessarily mean it like that, but it does remind me of Heaven's Gate, which is almost impossible to watch. I mean, it's the cinematography is excellent. It's really actually kind of a beautiful movie, you know, cinematically in that sense. But it goes on forever. It goes into irrelevancies. It goes into, it kind of gets grotesque in ways that aren't really necessary. And while it is talking about the Johnson County War, right, it never really explains it very well. And that may be because of the nature of the Johnson County War back in that time. But I'm curious as to what you think about the comparison, because it sounds to me like it's got the same sort of narrative problems that Heaven's Gate had, granting that Heaven's Gate had a lot of other problems, also length problems that Heaven's Gate had.
Yeah, the length is an issue. It's not a significant issue because, again, the craftsmanship is so top-notch. It's you're not bored, but at the same time, you can just imagine the story being told in a much more compact fashion. I think my issue is that it's the kind of movie that goes on forever, and yet you still want more. You still think that there are elements that could have been better explained, better explored. And so I think that's a frustration when you've got a movie that clearly has no problem going on, and yet you still feel a bit unsatisfied by the results. That's an issue. I also think it's a movie that has all the best intentions, but that's not always enough to make a great movie. I mean, I think this is a story that should be told. We should be aware of it. It's a dark chapter in American history for sure. But all of those noble endeavors are fine, but it doesn't necessarily guarantee a mesmerizing film. And I also will say that my fellow critics seem to disagree with me on this. The reviews have been mostly very glowing, but I also think that, and maybe this is a little bit catty of me, but I feel like some critics sometimes get caught up in the brand. And by the brand, I mean Martin Scorsese is one of our best directors. Yeah. He's been so impressive for so long. He's about 80. He's still making powerful movies. He's still an important voice on the screen. And I acknowledge all of that. But I also can see flaws in the film that should have been addressed in different drafts. And another thing, this was rewritten at one point to put more of a focus on Osage Nation and less on the FBI, thinking that's not where the story is. And I agree with that shift. But I think when you watch the movie, one of the main characters played by Lily Gladstone, who's quite good, she plays DiCaprio's wife, who's a member of this Native American tribe that's been attacked so often. But her character is very sick in the film. So for large parts of the movie, she doesn't really have an impact because she's laying in bed, because she's ill, you don't even get enough of that community to a satisfying degree. I think that would have made it a stronger movie.
Let's go to Lisa in Gallup, New Mexico, because she's got a comment on that very point. Lisa, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you so much, Willie One. This is very timely because I just spent some time with an Osage woman doing some conservation planning at Acoma, and just the spiritual aspect that is just has to be left out at this large of a scale of a movie is going to be, it's going to leave, Native people wanting that, more connection and missing some of the story, because our stories, this isn't a forum where we can tell our stories and share our stories and share that our faith is comparable to all people's faiths, and that we all do believe in the same, things that, of taking care of our earth and those kind of things. So I think this is a great start to just get our people on the screen and showing a different side. Like you said, this isn't going to be written in any books teaching people in school, because it is such a dark chapter when you think about what's going on in the world today. Right now, the wars that are happening, it's hard not to think that we're in the same loop. Until we get there, this is going to evoke a lot of that, I believe.
Well, Lisa, thank you very much for your phone call. And so, I think that there is a thirst to have some of these stories told, right? It's just that you hope that Christian, that it's going to be told in a way that is maybe a little bit more gripping and a little bit more a little bit more revealing.
Yeah, an interesting angle that Lisa brings up, because Scorsese, I mean, Last Temptation of Christ is certainly a movie that was brought huge controversy on him in the late 80s, I believe it was. But also he's done movies like Silence, and, you know, he has evoked themes of spirituality in ways that can be contentious, can also be compelling and powerful. And I don't think he really drills down into that segment of the story. And again, there are so many more horrific elements here. I understand why his focus was where it is, but I don't think that gets a close up here.
Christian, we got maybe like 20 seconds. Give me a name of another movie this weekend that people should be looking at.
Well, you know, I haven't even screened yet, but I'm very curious about it. It's called Old Dads with Bill Burr, a very funny comedian. It's on Netflix streaming right now. I just think he's a very interesting voice. And I think it's a culture clash comedy, the kind of thing that only he would be able to tell. So I'm very curious about it. I can't vouch for it because I haven't seen it yet, but I'm watching it tonight, and it might be worth checking out.
Old Dads on Netflix. There you go. Christian Toto, HollywoodInToto.com, at HollywoodInToto on Twitter. Be sure to listen to his podcast. Coming up next, The Cale Clark Show. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew Mariani. Have yourselves a great weekend.